Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and you're listening to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is Vision Australia's Senior Adaptive Technology Consultant and all-round tech guru, David Woodbridge. Hello, David, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me on.
So, David, having a look at your tracks, I think you've probably got a bit of a range of tracks here. And I wondered, you know, sort of whether that was a reflection on your life at all. And did you find it difficult just choosing those seven tracks?
I actually found it remarkably easy because when I originally thought, how am I going to do this? I thought, this is just really, really hard. But then I went and looked at sort of parts of my life, like boarding school with the first song and having children with another song and so on. It suddenly became crystal clear that they could reflect quite nicely. The only thing I really couldn't find, I guess, was that transition from, I guess, thinking in the early parts of my life that I would end up either being a farmer, transitioning through to being a social worker, and then transferring through to being a technologist. But I thought, you know what? What I'll do is I'll just, you know, thinking out of the square, I would just drag those tracks into whatever format I like. But overall, I would say they're a really good reflection, particularly the last one, because that's how I treat my current job at the moment.
And your first track is Sounds of Silence by Simon & Garfunkel, which takes you back to those days in the 70s and I think your start as a social worker. Was social work a career that you wanted to do, or was it one that you were sort of maybe persuaded to do as a good job for blind people?
Exactly. I was persuaded to do as a job for a blind person because they said, look, you know, there's no way you're going to be able to do, because I wanted to do computer science. And I got told I didn't have the aptitude for technology. And, you know, I was blind. So, of course, I had very good listening skills because apparently we are blind men, so you're very good at listening. But look, it was sort of, I guess it was sort of the, I don't want to say it was a lesser of two evils because I really did enjoy social work and I still use my skills today. So it wasn't a complete waste of time. But in some ways, I was encouraged to do it a little bit because I remember in the late 70s, and this is before I finished university in like 1984 or something, but I can remember there was this guy on, and I think it was called 2UW radio station here in Sydney. And it was Father Jim McLaren. And it probably wasn't very appropriate for a 12-year-old child to be listening to this, but it was, you know, people would ring up with their problems. You know, they were either, you know, extremely depressed or they just, you know, had domestic violence issues and so on and so on. I thought, wow, this guy can really listen and encourage people to speak about how their feelings and hopefully through speaking, allow them to get support and start healing and that sort of stuff. I'm sure back then I didn't explain it in those type of ways. But like I remember his opening song all the time was The Sound of Silence. And I thought, you know what? People really do need the space to be listened to. And I just wish back then, because I was being bullied a lot at boarding school, I just wish people had actually listened to me because the complaints sort of fell on deaf ears. And I don't know what it's like about other boarding schools around the world, but it's almost like, you know, you're in boarding school, buck up a little bit, take it, you'll be okay in the end.
And what was life like for you working within social work? Because you were obviously quite young in some ways at that time and having to deal with some topics and some issues that were probably quite heavy at the time.
Absolutely. So I went into direct drug and alcohol crisis counselling. And this was as a 22-year-old person. And I was sitting there thinking one day, what does a 22-year-old single male know about domestic violence or minor tranquilizing overdoses or heroin overdoses or suicide prevention, all that sort of stuff? And they always sort of drummed it in you back in the day that, you know, you didn't have to experience all the experiences to understand the emotions behind it. And I think when I stopped doing social work after 4 years, I thought, you know what, you may not need to experience all the experiences, but I still think you need some sort of life experience behind you. Because looking back now after about, you know, 30 more years later, I think, Wow, I wonder what type of social work role it was. So I'd love to sort of jump into a time capsule and zip back and just sit and listen to myself and go, oh God, David, no, don't you dare say what I think you're going to say. But you look, I was able to support people. I know for a fact I prevented three people from killing themselves. So because they actually rang back, three of them rang back about 12 months later and they said, oh, you probably don't remember me. But that was one of the best talks I had in my life. And I spent one of them, I spent 4 hours on the phone, and I actually thanked him for ringing me back. Because the problem with my job, because it was crisis counselling, once they walked out that door, you had no idea whether they survived, whether they got better, whether they went and got support. Because our whole job was about harm minimisation. It wasn't stopping people using drugs. It was all about harm minimisation. So, and that's what we did from sort of way to go. So, but no, I guess 4 years of doing crisis counselling just burnt me out, I think.
And did the sound of silence sort of help you sort of get away from all that and take you away from it and in a way possibly clear your mind from the day job?
I think it did because that's when I started really getting into music, and it was more sort of your relaxation, nature type sounds, instrumental type music. I just thought, I've been listening to my computer all day. I've been listening to people talk all day. The last thing I want to do sometimes is listen to another person either sing to me or talk to me. So I just used to vanish into a world of, sort of alternative reality where I could listen to music. And, back then, I guess the books weren't as prevalent they are today, but I used to grab as many books as I can listen to, and they were to both of my escapes, so music and reading.
Within the sound of silence, in restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone.
The classic Simon and Garfunkel sound there with The Sound of Silence, and a track that I think helped you sort of get away from the day job a little bit. We now come to a real classic TV 80s theme with the theme tune to Knight Rider. And I think maybe like me, you probably loved Knight Rider, and I can remember watching it in the 80s and thinking, gosh, this is a fantastic program in many ways. Before we start talking into our smartwatches and asking Kit, where are you? What made you want to get into technology? Because I think at this time you moved from social work to technology.
That's right. So it was interesting because it sort of coincided with me meeting a nun at where I was working, and she used to go upstairs and she labelled the mini PDB-11 Moses. So we used to go up and have a chat to Moses, i.e. we worked on Moses. And she actually encouraged me to, if you like, follow my dream. She said, don't, if people think you're not good at something, why don't you just find out yourself whether you're not good at it rather than going on and actually, assume what people say is true. And at that same stage, that's when Knight Rider came out. Now, I should say up front, I can't stand any of the actors in Knight Rider. I love the car. So I just thought, you know what? A talking computer to me sounds really, really cool. And about that time was also when the Apple IIe, or a bit later on, or before then, sorry, the Apple IIe came out. And I can remember using, geez, Word Talk and Small Talk and Sensible Speller on this whopping 128K floppy disk drive. And I thought, you know what? I can handle this stuff. I can do basic computer programming. I can swap out the hardware. Maybe there is such a chance for me to get into that sort of stuff myself. And towards the end of my time at the Crisis Counselling Service, there was a guy next door in one of the research institutions that actually wrote a program so I could use the old huge DeckTalk Classic as a speech synthesizer to access the database. And I actually rewrote the whole database for them. So, and that was sort of the cusp between moving on from social work into my actually current technology job that I've now been doing for 32 years. And, I don't classify myself as an IT person. I'm a technologist, and that's how I classify myself. But I just, it's really weird things how things won't work out. If I hadn't really listened to Knight Rider, and if I hadn't really almost bumped accidentally into that nun, and we shared the same experience about technology, what would be happening in the world in the future, I don't think I would have had the chance to have my current job.
And when you hear that theme to Knight Rider, what sort of memories come back to you?
Probably a sense of potential freedom in the future. So, because I used to have to get up very early and go to university, and I used a white cane, and I just thought, you know what, there really has to be more to life than, you know, tapping around and bumping into things, and there should be a better way of actually finding your way around, i.e. GPS now. Obstacle detection rather than running into poles all the time. Taking notes, because I remember I used to spend hours and hours in the Sydney University Library transcribing my notes from my good old APH recorder into Braille notes, and then having personal readers come in and read all my textbooks to me. And I just thought, you just can't tell me that somewhere in the future we're going to be able to make this a lot easier, because I've just found university so difficult because I had to spend so much extra time even getting the basic reading done, let alone doing any extra reading all the time. The thing to me about Knight Rider, I just find it inspirational with the song itself, that it's that sort of, you know, leap into the dangerous world of a man who doesn't exist. And to me, it's like, well, leap into my world, because I know that I'm actually going to take my technology as far as I can and basically watch me go, because you won't be able to stop me.
The TV theme there from Knight Rider, and I think one that both you and I can remember very well. David, we now come to a track that is very much for the children and parents, and I think for having fun too. How is it being a parent as a blind person? Did you find it hard or difficult, or was it just one of those things where, you know, like lots of things that we do as blind and partially sighted people, we just get on with it? But was it difficult or was it easy?
I think you're right. I think I just got on with it. I didn't think about the fact that I was blind or low vision. My first marriage probably, I guess, wasn't that great for both of us, because as a new mum, my wife back then didn't know sort of what to expect or to expect what a blind husband could actually do as far as the children were concerned and so on and so on. So it was hard, but I can remember the fact that, and even my second marriage, so my children today, they always say, oh, for God's sake, don't ask Dad or don't comment to Dad about anything, because you'll turn it into a story. So I think, and the fact that I had children really celebrated the fact that I've got an extremely vivid imagination, and I just love to imagine things, because, you know, I get bored. I mean, you sit in the car and you can't look out the window. You know, if my children are drawing on their, well, back then on the blackboard, or they're doing other stuff visually, I can't get involved. But as soon as I started telling my kids stories about mythical monsters lurking at the bottom of the garden, or the fact that the house, because it was on a rock, a sort of a rocky, stony surface, that was because it was hiding a magic cavern underneath the house. And if the thickness of the rock wasn't there, then all the magic that was underneath the house could spill out and affect the house, and the house might float away and blah, blah, blah. So I think, to me, having children allows you to be and has an excuse to be like a child again or all the time, because I think being an adult's pretty boring. I mean, geez, you're not allowed to have, well, sometimes I think you're not allowed to have fun or to behave like a child can, have this never-ending curiosity about the world, make fun of everything, basically, because if you take life too seriously, then, you know, life's not that long. So, you know, enjoy it while you can. So, you know, my oldest child now is like 35. She's just now had my second grandchild. And the first thing I said to my daughter, I went, wow, I can pull out all my old-fashioned nursery rhymes from when you were little. And, you know, I've still got my old stories from back when, and I've actually got a fairy garden actually built in the backyard, which I do, a little fairy garden with little houses in it. And I said, we can talk about fairies in the garden, the fact that, you know, I've got these wind chimes in the backyard. And she said, Dad, wait a minute, he's only 2 months old. He can't even speak English yet. So steady on a little bit and just slow down. But they were over the weekend as we're doing this program. And I just sung to him all the songs that I used to sing when my daughter was little. And she said, you know what, Dad, you haven't changed at all, have you? You just, You just love sharing stories and singing, and I do. So, to me, having children, it's the fact that it really does allow you to be a child. And I can remember talking to a bunch of teenagers back in the day when I was talking about technology, and when Windows came in, I went, "So, guys, as you can think about, on Play School, where they've got these magic windows that come up, and you think, oh, will I go for the round window or the square window?" Goes, "Oh, no, I don't know. I'm a teenager. I don't watch little children stuff like that." And I thought, wow, what disappointing things can you think about? Because I went, but I'm trying to associate, a fun thing about magic windows to do with Windows on this boring Windows 3.11 thing. And oh no, we're big adults, teenagers. We don't know anything about children stuff. So it's almost like when you start to grow up or something, there's almost this, I don't know, compulsion to get rid of the child in you. And that's like, no way, no one's getting rid of the child in me. Absolutely not. So I'm going to be exactly the way I am when I'm old, than when I am now. So no, to me, having children was absolutely fantastic.
And what is the track that you have marked for this time in your life, which I think is for all sorts of kids, parents,
It
and
is.
for having fun as well?
Yes, Bananas in Pyjamas. You can't beat Bananas in Pyjamas coming down the stairs. So, to me, that's just a magical one because, and you can change the words around. And of course, I was singing that to my grandson over the weekend, and I was adding a few more different tracks or different words to the song. And I even at one stage even got a banana out of the, two bananas out of the actual pantry. And I was demonstrating what it was like for B1 and B2 to be walking around and dancing and marching up and down the stairs and so on. So it's just great. You can really get involved in it. And that's what I liked about all the other children's songs with all the actions. I think my other little favourite one for school was I'm a Little Teapot, Short and Stout. And there's some other great ones you can do actions too, especially with the Wiggles and so on. But Bananas in Pyjamas, that was the first one that I used to use with my first marriage, with my first four lot of children. I've got seven altogether. And it was just, I don't know, it's just magical. I mean, of course, in reality, there is no such thing about magical bananas. We know they're actually guys in suits, blah, blah, blah. But when you just drop all that and just go, wow, isn't this cool that a piece of fruit can actually dance around the house and talk? So, my brain just says, go for it.
Bananas in pajamas are coming down the stairs. Bananas in pajamas are coming down in pairs. Bananas in pajamas.
Bananas in pajamas there, and hopefully some people listening will maybe doing the actions to that one, maybe.
Exactly.
We now come to a track that is dedicated to your current wife, or perhaps I should say your actual wife, probably. I'm getting myself into trouble there. And I think that it was a bit of a timely story of how you and your wife first met. Not quite brief encounter, but I think you did meet on a train.
We did meet on a train, which was actually very odd because, as a blind person, I mean, there's no way that you can determine whether you're going to be getting on the, the third or fourth last car of the train, because she was studying to be a dental assistant in Sydney, and she was just coming back late from TAFE, I think 2 nights a week, and I just happened to be constantly getting on the train, and if it wasn't for my guide dog back then, which I think was my third guide dog, I wouldn't have met her because he, how guide dogs are like. They go, "Oh, hello. There's a nice human being that I haven't met before. I'll just wander over and say hello," and that's how we first started talking. And because we then met up on the train, and then things progressed on from there. It was just, it was amazing. And of course, when I first heard my wife's voice, I went, "Geez, that's a really nice sounding voice." So one of the person behind that voice is also equally nice, and that's how we started off. But if I hadn't been working late one night, and if I hadn't been, catching that particular train and that particular time and that particular carriage, then I don't know if anything would have happened. So it's almost like when you look back in your life, you think, what would have happened in the fork of my life if that had happened, or that other thing had happened or hadn't have happened. So I'm very thankful to the Sydney State Rail Authority to magically allowing me to get back on that right car, the right door for, geez, maybe 2 months running. And then after that, they say life's history.
I think it's quite sort of timely in a way because, well, it's timely because of the trains, but I think also it's about that sort of chance meeting because you know, sort of sometimes you're looking for something and it's not there. And it's sometimes a meeting or you go to something and then you meet somebody and then you end up, you know, spending the rest of your life with that person. And if it wasn't for that chance meeting, then, you know, you wouldn't have the life you have now.
No, and it's interesting back on it, because I can honestly say my wife is my best friend and she's also my soulmate. So I think my first wife, I think it was more sort of that sometimes, and I don't agree with what I feel this way now, but back then I think, well, if somebody was interested in me, maybe that's all I can expect out of life. So whether it was bad or good or indifferent, I just thought, well, you know, we'll just go for it. We obviously like each other. We're friends and so on. Let's go for it. But, you know, my current wife, I mean, my wife now. I was almost going to be naughty and say version 2.0, being a tech person, but she'll shit me if I do. You know, we both of us just take the good and the bad of each other, and it's just brilliant. So, you know, we've been married now for... So coming up to 18 years now, and like every relationship, there is, you know, ups and downs and all over the place, but you just know at the end of the day the marriage and the relationship is so solid that you'd really have to do something catastrophic to be even put it in jeopardy.
So David, what is the track that is dedicated to your wife then?
So it's called I Knew I Loved You Before I Met You by an Australian band called Savage Garden, and it really goes to that fact that you basically met this person which is already almost made for you in a way, although that's not probably the way to describe it, that this person just fits in with your soul, your personality, your spirit so well that, you know, there must have been some higher power going, well, eventually that's my job done. I finally got these two people together.
Savage Garden there, and a track dedicated to your wife, David. We now come to a track, David, that I think sums up your sort of thoughts and feelings on, I suppose, what's happening in the world at the moment. Now that you're a grandfather, do you have a more philosophical outlook on life?
No, I don't. I don't. I have a advocacy outraged outlook on life. And I guess it's more the fact that, I don't know, I think sometimes as humans, we just tend to get a little bit complacent because we go, oh, well, look, you know, there's probably not much we can do about it, and let's live life, slip aside, and let somebody else take care of the problems. And I guess in some ways it's more with my life because I live and breathe as a blind person, there are just so many things that are just brushed over that really irritates me. And I was even saying at work today, I said, you know what, I could either accept this particular situation, and unfortunately it was an application that people forgot to check for accessibility, and I thought, you know what, I could just accept it the way it is, or I could go, well, sorry, that's not good enough, we've got to do something to make this thing work. Because the problem is, as soon as you become an advocate, you've got to do so much work, and you become almost like this devil's advocate, and you make life harder for yourself, you stand out a lot more, you've got to put a lot more energy in the stuff, you've got to have a lot more energy in your brain to be able to cope with, not people's negativity, but I guess their lack of understanding about what inclusive accessibility is. And then that filter then overlays what's happening in the rest of the world. So, you know, sometimes I wish, this is going to sound really weird, Toby, I just wish people could have a bit of a dose of a disability for these quote normal, or as in Harry Potter terms, these muggles out there. Because I sometimes think, would you behave this way if you had to put up every single day of your life as a person with a disability, and would you try and make the world a better place rather than squandering what you've got and probably fighting and arguing about stuff? At the end of the day, I just wonder whether it actually makes any difference to anybody except besides making people's lives miserable. So because my wife has also got a disability, she's got a physical disability, so she can't walk up and down stairs and that sort of stuff. And, you know, just the everyday stuff, you walk into a restaurant and all of a sudden you go, well, hang on a minute, there's a footstep to get into the restaurant. You said it was accessible. Oh, yeah, it's just one step. No. The step is 12 inches high. That's not accessible. So I just, you sort of get that feeling. What's that expression? What was that book? Men are from Mars and women are for Venus, or it might have been the other way around. And I just think, you know what? I feel like I'm, and that's why I love that song, because I feel like I'm standing on top of a mountain and I really don't want to yell out what the hell is going on, because I can't work it out. It doesn't make sense. It's not practical. It's not functional. It's not inclusive. And if you just spent your energy on other more positive stuff, you might actually get somewhere and be a nicer and a happier society, environment, culture, whatever it is. So, and, you know, look, if I have these images sometimes about building a nice little big tower in my backyard and just climbing to the top of it occasionally and just letting it rip about, you know, what is going on. So, no, so every now and again, I do put my headphones on so people can't hear me actually playing it all the time. Go and sit down and relax and just have it up full bore.
The track that sums up your feelings on life, David, what is it then?
Now, I'm probably going to say this title incorrect because I always get it wrong, but it's by Four Non Blondes and it's called What's Going On. But I think the real title, Toby, is probably What's Up, but I just like to say What's Going On because that's actually the words that they use in the song. And it's just a really powerful, you know, you almost get this woman's actually sensing from the gut, as it were, just really sort of thumping it out there into the universe. And that's what I like about it, or just all the power and I'm not going to give up, that sort of type of attitude.
And so I wait.
Four Non Blondes there, and a track I think that everybody should maybe listen to and maybe have a think about, perhaps. Now, David, we come to a track that is one from a musical, which is all about fantasy, maybe imagination, and possibly invention as well, too. I know if you've worked around tech for many, many years, and you enjoy helping other blind and partially sighted people with their technology, too. Why this particular track, and what's sort of, you know, sort of why sort of thinking about imagination and maybe making people think about things outside the box too?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. Like, number one, there is no such thing as a perfect device, whether it's an actual bit of hardware or software. If you say you've conquered the mountain, then you really haven't, because there's going to be another mountain out there that you haven't conquered. There's always a solution waiting to happen. And I've always got this belief in myself that I absolutely do not know enough. I haven't experienced enough. I haven't seen enough technology. I haven't evaluated enough. I haven't tested enough. Now, that might sound a bit negative, but it's this force that actually drives me on to do even better than I did before. And the thing about the imagination, I guess, side of things is, you know, take a device and then, you know, read the manual, which we, in computer terms, we say RTFM, and then see how far you can then take that technology beyond its specifications. And that's what I always like. Or you take a number of different things, like, you know, as blind people, we're always using a range of smartphones and apps and obstacle detection devices and all that sort of cool stuff. But it's the way that you use them that's important, rather than going, well, I'm going to use this tool for that and that tool for this. But like, it's like, no. What happens if you actually combined all those things? So to me, it's the old version of the old gestalt. So things that have separate parts can do a little bit, but when you put the whole gestalt together, it can do a lot more. So every time I get a device, I treat it like something brand new that I've never experienced before. The horizon's there. In fact, in my brain, I've got this constant thing about when I was losing my sight, I used to race 16-foot skiffs on Sydney Harbour, and I can always remember the sunset shining on the top of the wave in front of the boat and the sun also shining on the sails. And that's what I feel like when I get my hands on a new device, that the bow of the boat is just cresting the top of the wave, the sun's there, and like, let's just follow the sunset and see where it leads.
Technology has certainly sort of leaped in many ways over the years, and I can't sort of myself imagine what technology might be like in the future or what might be around, but maybe technology could help in a way to maybe save our planet or to maybe help clean up the seas of plastic that is in there. And, you know, I think there's some hope, isn't there, that technology could help to save us.
That's right. I mean, it doesn't have to be all the bad stuff about, you know, us ruining the planet or artificial intelligence taking over the world and getting rid of us, or a bunch of aliens turn up through some temporal time portal. Because I was reading the science fiction book the other day, and they said, people just won't travel by spaceships. It takes too long to get to places. So it's obviously going to be a temporal time warp type stuff. So I hope in the future that when we find technology that, you know, really does clean up the oceans, cleanses the pollution, reduces the climate change, the impact on the Earth's atmosphere, makes people's lives better for everybody. You know, everything's inclusive, designed. It doesn't matter what you're doing. There's always going to be some sort of, I guess, gadgety type thing or the environment that's going to be appropriate for you to be able to access it. And I know our holy grail at the moment seems to be the smart car, you know, self-driving autonomous cars. I'd love to be able to jump into a drone and go, okay, Mr. or Mrs. Drone, take me somewhere. And then, of course, the drone would drop you off, go and park where it's supposed to park, or even go and pick up somebody else and take them where, come back and grab you and take you home again. So, because to me, technology is not to make us lazy. Technology is to allow us to have more time, to invent more, to think more, to be more compassionate, to spend time with people that we care about, do what we love doing. And, you know, don't get lost in the technology side of things, because technology is only an enabler. It's only there to allow you to do other things. So, and that's why I tend to, when I grab a hold of technology, I produce demos and podcasts and fact sheets and everything else, because I think if I can allow somebody to be more independent, more enabled through technology, then I've done my job.
So what is the musical that your next track comes from, and which particular track from this musical have you chosen?
Absolutely. So, of course, this is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and it's Pure Imagination.
There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination living there.
Pure imagination there, and a track to give us all maybe a bit of hope for the future and maybe think outside the box too. David, we now come to your final track, the one that you might pass on to others that might give people hope for the future or maybe just inspire them. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
So this is I Did It My Way by Frank Sinatra. And my whole life, I guess, probably when I started my current job, so in 99, so for the last over 30 years, I really have tried to do things my way. And that means basically bucking the system at work, bucking the system with government departments, bucking the system for school and education stuff for my children, because I've never been satisfied with the status quo. So as I mentioned before, I don't take anything on face value. If there's something wrong, then I'll speak up about it as an advocate. And that's the way that I really do lead my life. That I do care, and I do take into account what people think about, you know, how I act and how I behave. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, I have to be true to my own morals and my own ethics and what I believe in. So if what I believe in goes against with what others believe in, then basically it's just tough luck. And, you know, it's basically take it or leave it. And, you know, having worked at the same workplace for 3 decades, having survived, I think it's now about 9 retrenchments going over that period, which is just normal. You know, with being a charity, we've faced funding issues, or we've faced staff reductions and all that sort of stuff. And I'm just thinking, I must have got something magical correct in those 30 years or more that says, well, you know, at the end of the day, David Woodbridge he's a bit of a pain in the neck. He's not arrogant, but he's very assertive. If you want an opinion, he'll certainly give it without you asking for it. And that's the way that I've always worked. So I think somehow I've just managed to get the respect of all levels of management at Vision Australia over those 3 decades. And, you know, as a researcher, as a person who tests all equipment, who talks to developers, who talks to manufacturers, and they all get the same level of honesty that I've always done, then like I said, it just really does come back to the fact that I'm doing everything my way. That's not to say that I don't change, because if you don't change, then you're stagnating. So, I'm always willing to take feedback on all that sort of stuff. But like I said, I know exactly what my bottom line is. And if my bottom line gets pushed too much, then my bottom line goes, excuse me. That's as far as you go, mate. So, no. And I just, that pure imagination song by the song, the way Frank Sinatra sings it, it's just, again, it's very powerful. It's like that What's Up song from the Four Non Blondes. It's just got a very powerful message behind it.
Well, thank you very much indeed, David Woodbridge, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's been my pleasure.
And more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew.